106 on WGN, and this is John Williams, and lots to do on the show today. We're here all the way until 3 o'clock, then Ro and Anna stroll into the studios. So, I'm kind of intrigued by Sarah Sanders, who opened the White House press briefing today with a description of the president or the Republican tax bill. And, you know, I've been reading it today or reading the stories about it, and I don't know. I don't think you do either, by the way. If this is going to be good for you or bad for you, if it's going to work for all of us or not work for all of us. You know, what they tell you is that it sounds like most of us are going to get a tax cut and the taxes will be less and then we'll all have more money to spend and that'll keep the economy, which is actually getting better all the time, that'll keep it doing well. So who's not for that, right? And, you know, I can't figure out if it's like going to be good for the United States of America. All I'm interested in, to be honest with you, I mean, the first thing I'm interested in anyway is how does it affect me? So will I get to deduct my mortgage interest or my state and local taxes? Will my property taxes be something that I can deduct? And for a lot of us, the answer will still be yes. There are some caps, but those will be for the highest wage earners. And if you're not in that bracket, then, you know, a lot of us don't have that much to worry about. At least that's what they're saying. I'm not real sure. And then it depends on what version passes. And maybe you're a high wage earner and you're not crazy about it anyway. But Sarah Sanders came out today and she says, okay, so here's an analogy that's been floating around the internet that will help us all understand the logic behind the president's plan.
Suppose that every day 10 people, for our purposes, we'll say reporters, go out for beer, and the bill for all 10 comes to $100. If these 10 reporters paid their tab every night the way we pay our taxes, it would go something like this. The first four, the poorest, would pay nothing. The fifth would pay $1. The sixth would pay $3. The seventh would pay $7. The eighth would pay $12. The ninth would pay $18. The tenth, the richest, would pay $59. So that's what they decided to do. The 10 reporters drank in the bar every day and seemed quite happy with the arrangement until one day the bar owner threw them a curveball. Since you're all such good customers, he said, I'm going to reduce the cost of your daily beer by $20. Drinks for the 10 reporters would now cost just $80. The group still wanted to pay their bill the way we pay our taxes, so the first four were unaffected. They would still drink for free. But what about the other six? How could they divide the $20 windfall so that everyone would get their fair share? These are the reporters after all, so they're concerned with fairness. They realize that $20 divided by six is $3.33. But if they subtracted that from everybody's share, then the fifth reporter and the sixth reporter would each end up being paid to drink beer. So the bar owner suggested that it would be fair to reduce each man's bill by a higher percentage the poorer he was. By doing that, he explained, they'd continue following the principle of the tax system they'd been using. So he proceeded to work out the amounts he suggested that each should pay now. And so the fifth reporter, like the first four, now paid nothing. He got a 100% saving. The sixth now paid $2 instead of $3, a 33% saving. The seventh now paid $5 instead of $7, a 28% saving. The eighth now paid $9 instead of $12, a 25% saving. The ninth now paid 14 instead of 18, which was a 22% saving. And the 10th now paid $49 instead of $59, a 16% saving. So each of the six was better off than before, and the first four continued to drink for free. But once outside the bar, the reporters began to compare their savings. I only got a dollar out of the $20 saving, declared the sixth reporter. And she pointed to the 10th reporter. He got 10. Yes, that's right, exclaimed the fifth reporter. I only saved a dollar, too. It's unfair that he received 10 times more benefit than me. That's true, shouted the seventh reporter. Why should he get $10 back when I only got two? The wealthy gets all the breaks. Wait a minute, yelled the first four reporters in unison. We didn't get anything at all. This new tax system exploits the poor. The nine reporters yelled at the 10th and made him feel bad. So the next night, the 10th man didn't show up for drinks, and the nine sat down and had their beers without him. But when it came time to pay the bill, they discovered something important. They no longer had enough money between them all to even cover half of the bill. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how our tax system works. The people who already paid the highest taxes will naturally benefit from a tax reduction, but not the largest percent benefit. Taxing them too much, attack them, and they might start drinking overseas where the atmosphere is somewhat friendlier. This is a silly story, of course, but it illustrates some very important points. Our tax cuts and reforms will create a fairer system that works better for everyone. And it will make our country the friendliest in the world for American families trying to build a better life for themselves and their children, and for American companies seeking a competitive edge. And I'll be happy to get that story to everybody so that you can get those numbers later. Again, I know that that may be an oversimplification, but I think it paints a very good picture of the tax system. And with that, I'll take your questions.
All right.
Is that how she started?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the beginning of the White House press briefing. They pulled that off the interwebs and they said, hey, here's what it's like. The numbers aren't the same, but you get the principle and the idea. I'm wondering what your reaction to that is. She got a point, you know, so I'm listening to that. I graduated from Manuka High School and went on to Southern Illinois University after 2 years at Joliet Junior College. So I consider myself a highly educated individual. That makes sense to me. I think she's got a point there. I'm sure there's some problems with that, but what's your thought about the beer analogy? 312-981-7200. This from today's Chicago Tribune. The House GOP tax plan would dramatically lower the cap on widely used mortgage interest deductions to new loans totaling no more than $500,000. And I, you know, so this, I, for instance, I think there's two ways to look at that. They're lowering the cap on widely used mortgage interest deductions. But if you're not borrowing more than $500,000, then it's not going to affect you. And most of us, when we buy a house, don't borrow more than $500,000. If you do borrow more than $500,000, you won't be able to deduct that money, but too bad for you. It would also immediately slash the corporate tax rate to 20% from 35%. The devil's in the details there, too. What loopholes are you going to close? So if I have in my head that most companies pay about 18%, you know, throughout the high, throughout the low, the middle is about 18%. So if you lower it to 20%, maybe everybody's better off, as long as then with all the loopholes, they don't get it down to zero. Eliminate deductions for state and local income taxes. Okay, that sucks. That will cost you money. It'll cap property tax deductions at $10,000. Do you pay more than $10,000 in taxes on your property? You will be able to deduct up to $10,000 on that, but afterwards you won't. Okay, mine are below $10,000. But if yours are above, you may that's one against you. What do they pay in that fancy neighborhood you live in, Steve Bertrand? Do you guys pay more on average, would you say, in your neighborhood than $10,000 in property taxes?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm shocked at what some people pay, $20,000.
I am too. I mean, so when we lived in LaGrange Park, we were not paying $10,000 in property taxes. And we had a nice size house, and it was a pretty lot, and blah, blah, blah. You know, central air, the works. And neighbors of mine, friends of mine, were paying a lot more than $10,000. And I didn't always appreciate the differences in the two properties. And you're kind of hush-hush about that when you're talking with your friends over cocktails because you don't want everybody to be mad at you or you don't want to out yourself for not paying that much. But some of them were paying $15,000, $18,000. I thought that was high, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, the same fire truck comes to pretty much all the houses out there, so the disparity kind of gives you pause. They will not change, they said, the 401k retirements.
Right.
That's good.
Right. Well, you know, but so that the retirement, what they were looking at with the 401k was pretty high. I think it was $18,000 a year.
Right.
Okay. So you'd have to be contributing more than $18,000 to. So, I mean, if you're looking out for the poor, strictly, you could say, well, you know, the poor, if they're living in neighborhoods where they're probably not paying $10,000 a year in property taxes,
doesn't affect them.
They still would lose their income tax deduction.
Well, the poor don't itemize anyway. They would just take the standard deduction.
Not if they own a house, they wouldn't.
Well, then maybe they're not so poor. I mean, who are we talking about here?
Well, I think there are a lot of people just getting by who own their own houses.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, But it said
I
here,
live with three of them.
No, listen, you're right. I mean, I think all of us will. Well, it says here they would lower the cap on the widely used mortgage interest deductions to new loans totaling no more than $500,000. So you'd have to be, say you're putting 20% down, plus you're borrowing $500,000, you're at $600,000. That's a big house. So if you now have to lose the deduction on the 501,000th dollar,
Right, that impacts some
people, but I'm sorry for you. But I mean, okay, that's your cross to bear.
The poor middle class aren't hurt too much by that.
Yeah. Besides, according to Sarah Sanders, the first 40% are the first four people drinking the beer aren't paying any taxes anyway. They're drinking for free.
That's why they're trashed.
And yeah, really. I suppose you might disagree with that. I mean, I don't know exactly what they're drinking for free means, because if you are poor and whatever the definition of that is for you, if you're, you know, buying bread at the store, you're paying taxes on gas and you're paying taxes on your clothes. You're paying taxes on stuff, right?
Yeah. I'm just looking. I was listening to that differently than you. I was listening to that as communications professors now going to their students and saying, this isn't how you convey a message.
Oh, I think it. Well, I
went up and made my lunch while she was still talking. I mean, that was a long, sort of drawn out kind of.
Yeah, well, it's numerical, too. I mean, it felt a little like math, so maybe there's a checkout. But you weren't there when we just recorded the Mincing Rascals podcast today. It's a weekly conversation Steve and I have with our friends in the Chicago Tribune, most often Krista McQuarrie, the editorial writer, Scott Standis, the editorial cartoonist, and Eric Zorn, the famed columnist. At the end of the podcast, we all say, here's our recommendations. And after you did yours, you had to buzz out for your show.
Right.
I said that I'm recommending with reservation Think Bigly by Scott Adams, the Dilbert cartoonist, who I'm interviewing tomorrow.
Okay.
And in there, he says that Trump is a brilliant communicator because when he talks, and he's a fan of Trump, deal with it. He says when he talks, he's a brilliant communicator because he uses imagery, like Sarah Sanders did with the beer. If I'm going to talk to you about a tax plan and what's fair, I could say, well, you're in the 35% bracket, but you have zero deduction. No. Describe it as 10 people at a bar drinking.
Yeah, no,
beers.
I get that. But, okay. It was about 8 minutes. That's my point.
What I just played was not four.
Really?
Really? Oh, hey, MTV generation, you don't have 4 minutes to listen to the most important thing coming out of the White House?
I can't believe that was only 4 minutes. I really can't.
It felt longer. That's because she has no, like at the beginning, she said, all right, this is a thing about drinking beer. And we'll say that it's, you know, reporters. And then she kind of does that half smile. She does like, hey, we're all together.
Because you disgust me?
No, because that was kind of a funny thing I said. And then she said, but I'm just saying that for my mom and dad. The reference being there that, you know, he's a preacher and I don't want them to be thinking that I'm drinking beers with y'all. That was the Sarah. So she was kind of yucking it up with them. And whenever she tries that, no one says a sound. It's very quiet. She doesn't get that sort of, yeah, we're with you, Sarah. So she gave an analogy that was visual. By the way, the point in the book, Think Bigly, is that when Donald Trump is talking about a wall, he's brilliant. He's brilliant. He says, imagine a big, beautiful wall. I'm going to build a big, beautiful wall. And everybody imagines in their head what that big, beautiful wall will look like without him ever being too specific about it. And he could say, what we really need to do is protect us from illegal immigration because of the jobs and the crime. And while he mentions that, the image of just, let's just throw up a wall, whether he means it or not, Scott Adams says, the Dilbert creator, is brilliant. Because you can see a wall, you know a wall, you can get behind a wall. Wall good.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I get that. But if he doesn't mean it, then there seems. I mean, I wonder what Dilbert would say.
Exactly. But, I mean, that's
if he doesn't ever intend to do it, and he's just using it to convey a message, then that chicken's got to come home to roost eventually.
How is that not telling the truth at some point? And I have a lot of problems with this. Listen, I recommended the book because it's out there, and that's one way to look at this presidency, and it makes sense. Doesn't mean you like it. And I surely don't subscribe to everything that he says. But the book is Think Bigly, and the Dilbert creator wrote it. And it's well written, but it's making me nuts with every page. Okay, Matt and Mike and the rest of you want to comment on all of this? Yeah, you may too. 312-981-7200. You can call or text WGN. Hey, Matt, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Good evening, Mr. Prince, or sorry, King John Williams. So I'm calling because is Huckleberry on a different planet? Like, you have such great orders of the press corps in the past, Josh Earnest. Sean Spicer was better at this than she is.
Yeah.
Honestly. Because
you didn't like her analogy, huh?
Sean Spicer, while he was Sean Spicer, at least could give you a coherent thought that didn't seem to take 9.5 hours. This just kept going on and on, and this guy will have 4 beers for $3, and this guy will have 8 beers for $5. Who cares? Can't somebody explain it in a fashion that does not feel like they're trying to dumb down the rest of America? Anyway, John, I think you're doing a very, very good job, and I frankly love that video piece you put online of you invading the Rokan show on your little motorized...
I'm so glad you mentioned that. If you go to WGNradio.com or follow me on Facebook, I'm King John Williams, you'll find the latest in our Crown Cam video series. And I think that was the funniest thing we have ever done. I don't edit it and produce it, but I'm in it. And boy, do they do a good job.
It was hilarious.
I'm glad
anyway,
you
have a good day, sir.
Yeah, you do too. I'm glad you're listening wherever you are and watching it. It's go to WGNradio.com. It's the Crown Cam video. It's season 2, episode 5. This is Alan. You're on WGN. Alan, what did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, John, just wanted to comment on that story and point out the obvious why it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You got 10 people of different economic strata in the room. So what is the beer supposed to represent that they all have equal amounts that they're getting taxed on? That makes no sense. The 10th richest guy is drinking Cristal.
Oh, that's right.
I'm drinking red, white, and blue.
I knew there was a problem with this, or at least it was more complicated than that.
She's saying you're getting taxed on, you all have the same wealth, which obviously we don't. And the guy in the middle, the ninth guy's drinking Dom, and somebody's, seventh guy is drinking Johnny Walker Black. But I'm down at the bottom drinking my Slips, and,
my Buckhorn. What are you drinking in that bar, by the way, Alan? What are you having?
Yeah, well, I'm not in the bar yet, but after that story, I might have to go for one.
Thanks for the call. I think this is Joan. You're on. You guys are good. Joan, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Oh, I was listening to that lady congressman from Washington talking about the family of four that makes $59,000 a year.
I didn't hear this, but keep going.
Well, you weren't watching the TV.
Right.
Anyway, that family of four, holy cow, just before the holidays, as if that's when it's going to take effect, and of course it won't, but they're going to get $1,182 more out of this tax cut that's going to do how much for the 1% and eliminate the death tax and all that kind of stuff, and these four people are going to get $1,182. Gosh, maybe they can redo the kitchen. Maybe they can buy a new car.
So you're saying it's not helping the middle class enough? Is that what you're hearing, Joan?
Yes.
All right, I appreciate the call. It's 127. Let's see. David, are you next? You're on WGN. What did you want to say, David? Hi.
Hello there.
Hi, David. You're on the air.
I love your show, and but I am I cannot believe I call it the left. They don't see the whole picture. I own my own business, and if you don't tax the real poor people, they will take that money and spend it. The economy will be on fire. I'm in warehouses right now. The economy is so hot, but I have people that just have like a regular job, and they're like, "What's going to happen? What's going to happen? You're going to see such growth and more tax are going to be paid." It's like, and nobody seems to understand this little story Sarah Huckabee said. It was like a beautiful story.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I she put that out there, and I knew there'd be people that liked it and got it, and some people who had questions about it and would criticize it. The one thing that I'm still wondering about, too, I've got to take a break, Mike. I appreciate your caller, David, is that the idea that if we tax people less, then we'll all have more money, and if we all have more money, we'll all spend more money, and that fuels the economy. I think that's trickle-down economics. And my recollection of that was that it didn't go so great. If this is that, then another question I'm going to have to ask some smart people, and I guess you should too, is how is this different? How will this make things better? Bobby Acino is in our studio. He is a chief market strategist of Path Trading Partners here in Chicago. I didn't invite you in to talk about the president's tax plan, Bob, but
you could have.
Do you have anything to say about the president's tax plan?
These things never go through the way they're initially presented. So I always wait till the third or fourth incarnation of it. To me, there's a lot of talk about this being sort of a representation of trickle-down economics. Trickle-down economics is not actually a phrase Ronald Reagan ever used. It was initiated in the media first.
But trickle-down failed, right?
It was never called trickle-down.
Whatever
in
you
some
called
ways it,
it
did.
Whatever it was,
in
that
some,
idea that
yeah.
you tax people less and the money they have is thrown into the economy and that generates more taxes and we dig ourselves out that way by actually putting in less. Does that work?
It depends on who you talk to. Some of the exuberance of the 90s was based off of trickle-down. But it ends up, what we end up doing is we give too much credit or too much blame to the president 8 years after the fact. The U.S. economy is an ocean liner. It's not a speedboat. It takes about 25 years for an economic experiment to actually foster itself in the
actual economy. So what do you think we're benefiting from today? I mean, the market's up
25%.
Well, yeah. No, I'm saying the market, the economy and the markets are different. But our
Absolutely.
401ks are all doing better.
Absolutely.
And the Dow is at record high, and so too are the other indices. Why?
Well, that's where you're benefiting. This perception that companies are going to have more capital to buy their own stock back. That's the initial burst. We do have good corporate earnings, about 4.7% earnings growth so far, with about 80% of the companies reporting by Friday. That'll be about 80% of the S&P 500, so it's good. If you take out insurance companies, it's closer to 7.5%.
Really?
The insurance company's getting damaged by the hurricane. So
interest rates are low.
Interest rates are low, so they're able to borrow money for projects and use their profits to buy back stock. So if you're in the stock market, you're doing better.
So is the president right in taking claim for this?
No. I mean, that's basically no president is right in taking claim or blame. It is much more on Congress. It is much more on the bureaucracies that are in place. It's much more on the state level and the local level than it is all the way up to the executive branch. It's like blaming a relief pitcher for a game loss. It just doesn't make sense.
So the reason I asked you in, all good stuff,
mm-hmm.
is because I saw, and boy, am I way over my head here, but the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and the CBOE, as I understand it, are contemplating trading Bitcoin futures. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, what is a Bitcoin?
So Bitcoin is a virtual currency.
And this is what you do, right? Is this your area?
It's one of the things we do, yes.
Okay.
We do a lot of things, but that's one of the things we do.
What's a Bitcoin?
A Bitcoin is a virtual currency. It's essentially a currency that is, its platform is something called blockchain. Now, what a blockchain is it's a general ledger open to more than one opposing entity. So you kind of have to know what a ledger is to understand what a blockchain is. You get your bank statement and you see money going in and money coming out. And every once in a while you go, wow, that's a mistake. I didn't spend $300 on coffee. And you call your bank. With a blockchain, you would call 6,000 different people. Or to say it more simply, 6,000 different computers would verify that transaction prior to it going on your ledger.
So you see Bitcoin as a safer means of doing business, a smarter, a more efficient?
It's smarter. It's not necessarily efficient yet. It is smarter, and it's not necessarily safer yet.
Here's the way I understand Bitcoin. So say I mow your lawn.
Mm-hmm.
You could give me $10, or you could say, I'm going to give you 10 Bitcoin. That's currency that you can now go spend without ever having given you a dollar. And kind of that's what we do now. You credit my account, but you would give me a Bitcoin, and now I can use the value of that lawn mowing job for something else. And the Bitcoin would be the currency with which I would make that transaction.
That's basically correct, and the bank is out of the picture. There's no middleman. There's also currently, and this is the problem that I have with Bitcoin as a store of value, which I don't believe it is, currently that would be a tax-free transaction on both parts because there is no income earned anywhere that the government is reaching for yet.
So did Bitcoin start for drug dealers or prostitutes?
No, it actually started as a more intelligent way of verifying transactions. It started as blockchain. And then somebody was smart enough to say, well, I'm going to create a currency off of this. There's many things a blockchain can make more efficient.
But I see how the black market could benefit from that, right?
And they do. Not necessarily with Bitcoin anymore, because that's much more trackable. They're right now, last I checked, it's probably more than that at this point. There's 1,097 cryptocurrencies.
Really?
Yeah. So what you're looking at is about five or six leaders in the space, and the rest of them, quite frankly, are all garbage.
But what I'm recollecting is not without some truth, right?
It is absolutely with truth.
And that makes sense because, but here's the problem with that. Say for legal or illegal purposes, you and I agree to pay me in Bitcoin. I can't then take that to Mariano's and buy groceries, right?
No, but you can buy groceries with it. For example, there's an app called Gift, and it's G-Y-F-T, if I'm getting that right. You can take Bitcoin and buy, and I don't have any part in this app, by the way, for full disclosure, I always have to do that. You can actually buy gift cards for about 50,000 different companies like Amazon or Zappos or possibly Mario. I don't know if Mariana's mm-hmm, on that list, mm-hmm. But you can take Bitcoin, buy a $100 gift card, take that gift card in. It's a virtual gift card. It's electronic gift card.
Well, is that what has to happen? I mean, for Bitcoin to make any sense in the world, if my employer is going to pay me or in private transactions, we're going to compensate each other with Bitcoin, it has to then be redeemable at regular retailers, right?
Right, and there are a lot of retailers that take it.
But
for example, Subway takes it.
The Subway?
Subway takes direct
Subway sandwiches.
Bitcoin, yes.
Really? I can go to Subway and get a Subway sandwich with Bitcoin?
It'd be similar to Apple Pay. You would open up your quote-unquote Bitcoin wallet, and you would just pay with Bitcoin at its current value.
Depending on the value that I have in there. What's one Bitcoin worth?
Right now, it's just under $7,000.
How would I even get a Bitcoin? Say I wanted some Bitcoin now. I took money out of savings. What would I do?
Well, there's Bitcoin brokers that are out there, and this is where the danger comes in. Right now, none of this is regulated. It's kind of the wild, wild west. So there are some established Bitcoin brokers. Coinbase is one of them, for example. You can go out there and you could purchase partial Bitcoins. You don't have to have $7,000. You can purchase partial Bitcoins.
Would I then have a debit card or a bank account?
The smart way is to have a cryptocurrency wallet, which is another piece of software that your cryptocurrencies are stored in.
That's an app on my phone?
It's an app on your phone. They actually have sell physical electronic devices as well, but most people use it as an app on their phone. Similar email. You have an address that you can give people, yeah. And then you have a key, which is private, to get into your Bitcoin.
We're talking about Bitcoin. Bob Iacino, right?
It's Iacino.
Iacino mm-hmm. is here. He is the chief market strategist at Path Trading Partners in Chicago. And this is even more relevant now because the Chicago Mercantile Exchange wants to trade Bitcoin futures. Okay, explain that to me in a minute.
Way before fake news entered our lexicon, there was a guy named Walter Cronkite.
Old anchormen, you see, don't fade away. They just keep coming back for more.
He was the face of real news, and Bill Curtis has a documentary about him. He'll be here to discuss at 6:10.
Mark Sapelsa stops by to play Newsaroos and also explains why he's going through Rose garbage.
Plus, Richard Roper will tell us if Thor is going to hammer the competition at the box office.
Rokan Show with Anna Devlantis, up next at 3 on 720 WGN.
So, what can we do for you here at Bank Humungo, Mr. Peters?
Well, I'm looking for a bank that can handle our business banking needs.
Ah, you've come to the right place. Bank Humungo has over 1,200 branches in 134 cities around the country.
Wow.
Now, tell me a little about your business.
We're a 28-person architectural group here in Chicago, and we're really growing our business, especially in Europe, and we need a... Sir, you dozed off.
Oh, sorry. That happens when a small business like your small business is too small to be big.
While your business may not excite some banks, at First American, you'll find a privately held bank founded and managed in Chicago with all the sophisticated products and services to help you grow it. From conventional loans and treasury management to international banking and employee benefits consulting, First American is just the right size to meet your growing needs.
All right, I'm out of here.
Good. Come back and see us when you're bigger and more important.
First American Bank. We're the right size for any privately held up-and-coming business. Call us at 847-586-2700 or log on to firstambank.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Would you like to hear better? Since 1979, Hearing Help Express has been a pioneer in providing high-quality, affordable hearing aids direct to consumers. Why, you ask? Because they're committed to providing the public with greater access to hearing health solutions through the mail, over the phone, and online. So if you'd like to hear better, whether you have mobility concerns or it's easier for you to shop from home, they're the preferred solution. Contact them for a wide selection of FDA-registered hearing aids, starting as low as $2.99 each. All hearing aids come with a risk-free 45-day home trial and 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Call 800-EAR-MATE for a free hearing consultation with one of their licensed hearing aid dispensers. Hearing Help Express, A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. Call 800-EAR-MATE, that's 800-327-6283, or visit them online at hearinghelp.com/WGN. That's hearing, HELP.com/WGN.
Page one of the business section of yesterday's Tribune, page one of yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Sometimes, too, everybody had the story. The CME is going to start trading Bitcoin futures, or at least they want to. So we called them, and they said, well, talk to Bob Iacino. He is the chief market strategist for a company called Path Trading Partners. And so we asked him to come in and explain some of this to us. Okay, so you told us what Bitcoin are. I'm thoroughly confused. Now let's go on to, that's me, not you. Actually, I think we all kind of get it, but we just still don't see the need for it, right? Because I'm using a virtual currency now with my debit card. I don't handle cash much. I just swipe and go, swipe and go, swipe and go.
Correct.
So what do I need a Bitcoin for? How is that different than electronic transfers with debit cards?
It is the parties in between the transactions. So again, you rely on Chase or Bank of America to be correct, to guarantee that you have the money that you have.
Yeah.
And that generally works. But people have errors on their statements all the time. With a blockchain, there's going to be very few errors because you have 6,000 computers checking the transaction, and one transaction stacks upon another, and they never get deleted.
And that's the reason.
It's self-auditing.
I know that, but I, to be honest with you, I have more faith in my bank than I do me. I'm more likely to make a mistake than they are.
Mm-hmm.
That may be foolish, but I, as an institution, think banks generally get it right. Am I wrong? I mean,
ask people that in 2007, 2008, they might have a different opinion. You are in the majority, but the minority is growing that doesn't trust their bank anymore.
And so there's a market for Bitcoin.
Correct.
So then what's the CME going to do?
The CME is going to establish a futures contract, which now gives the ability for people to speculate or invest in Bitcoin specifically. They'll probably lead into other cryptocurrencies. But what they're doing is a very good thing because they're giving you the opportunity to hold that as an investment and have a place to hedge risk. Hedging is not that complicated of a concept. People think it is. It's really not. It's essentially insurance. Okay, when you buy your car insurance, you bet every 6 months with your insurance company, I bet you I get into an accident. They say, I bet you won't. And every 6 months they win. Right. And you pay them your $600 or whatever it is.
Yeah, right.
The CME Group is allowing you to insure your Bitcoin investment by having a futures contract you can hedge against. This gives Bitcoin so much more volume and so much more validity. And that's why the price went from under $6,000 to over $7,000 today because of this announcement.
Really?
So now institutions could get involved in Bitcoin.
And actually, before it was at $6,000, what was it? I mean, it's gone up
over 500% this year alone. Which is nuts, right? I mean, you're looking at me like it's nuts. It's nuts. But what the CME did was now make it so that if it crashes 500%, you can protect yourself. They're doing those of us that trade in Bitcoin a huge, huge service.
If I bought pork belly futures,
yes,
I'm going to guess that people want to eat bacon down the road. And maybe if a lot of people want to eat bacon, then the value of that will go up. And lucky me, right? That's good.
Right.
Okay. So people are... Is this growth a bet by people that Bitcoin is going to grow in popularity and use?
It's actually going to foster some of that growth. Again, because if you think of what simple hedging is, you're not the person who's going to hedge pork bellies. I don't eat pork anymore because my dog looks like a pig and it makes me feel bad. But having said that, what is going to happen is the pork belly farmers.
How do you think
the pig feels
about that?
There you go.
Go ahead.
Poor pigs.
I know.
The pork belly farmers are the ones that use pork belly futures, the pig farmers. They agree to sell their pigs at a price in the future. Well, the price fluctuates while the pig's growing. So they hedge the risk of price fluctuation at the CME. Now you can do that with Bitcoin. So people have been asking me every day for the last year, is it too late to get into Bitcoin? Well, now I would say probably, but if you do get in, you probably want to hedge at the CME in case it crashes. Hmm. And it can crash.
You know, Bitcoin to me sounds a little hinky. Bitcoin sounds a little not legit. And that the CME puts a stamp on it.
Right.
Makes me feel better about it, but it also makes me worry about them. I'm like, guys, do you really want to get into bed with this? I understand bacon. I understand corn. What? Bitcoin? Are you kidding me?
The CME's business model essentially is to vet the people that are involved in these transactions.
Yeah, who are these people? Who's got Bitcoin? Who's the, like, the Central Bank of the United States has our currency. Mm-hmm. Who has the Bitcoin and how much Bitcoin is there?
Well, there's a limited amount of Bitcoin that can be quote-unquote mined, and we need a whole show to talk about mining. But what it is it's there's a mathematical equation that gets solved, and when whichever computer solves it first gets more Bitcoin. And they also get to verify the transactions that are waiting to be posted to this general ledger. Do you need a white? Should we do a whiteboard?
You're just making radio, this up. You're just these words coming out of your mouth. You're just inventing this.
Essentially,
aren't you?
If you think of it like this, years ago, and this is not my example. I heard somebody else say this, but years ago, when you wanted to research something, you went to Encyclopedia Britannica, and you trusted that Encyclopedia Britannica, everything was correct in there. Okay. Now, if you want to learn something, you go to Wikipedia. There's hundreds of thousands of people putting things on Wikipedia. And there's hundreds of thousands of people, well, there's thousands of people verifying those things that are put on Wikipedia. That's what blockchain is. So now if I give you 10 Bitcoin, well, that's a lot of money. If I give you one Bitcoin, okay, there's 6,000 people verifying that I have that Bitcoin to give you, as opposed to one institution verifying it.
I did not realize that that was such an issue for people. Again, you know,
there's a huge group of people that just don't trust banks anymore, and they don't trust governments anymore, as we see from the election, and they just want something that is self-verified.
Yeah. Is this the way the planet is going to go, do you think?
I think so. Bitcoin solves a lot of problems. It isn't just a currency thing. It is, again, a large group of people verifying things that in the past we have relied upon one person to verify.
But what does the currency say? You know, faith or whatever it is.
Faith and credit of the American government.
Yeah, I have. Sometimes more than at other times, but I believe in the United States and its ability to pay the debts.
Well, emerging markets are going to be a huge cryptocurrency haven because they don't have the trust that we have.
In us or in their own currency.
Own government.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I could see that. If I was in the Philippines or, I don't know, pick a far-flung place where inflation
Chile, Venezuela.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Then that might be attractive. Huh. All right. I'm done asking you questions about this. Do other people understand all of this?
Give me a couple of sessions to explain it, and they do. And a whiteboard helps.
Yeah,
but I'll be outside on Michigan Avenue if anyone wants to.
Well, Sarah Huckabee Sanders opened up the press. Cue it up, Tom, to the White House press briefing today that Sarah, he's not listening. Sarah Sanders opened the White House press briefing today, and she was describing the new tax plan, and she put it in terms of 10 beers. 10 people go into a bar and each order a beer, but the first four, don't have to pay for it because they're the low-wage earners and they don't pay taxes. And then it graduates up to the 10th person who pays 59% of the bar bill for everybody. She says with the new tax plan, she walked us through it that way. It's kind of a whiteboard thing.
Yeah, again, when you have the sort of thing we had today where there's the release of a tax plan, it'll take economists and accountants 10 to 15 days and they'll come to different conclusions.
Well, that's my problem.
That's why I don't... if we had 6,000 cryptocurrency blockchain people looking at it, yeah, and they all came to an agreement, yeah, I would believe them.
You would. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the thing that bothers me about this. I don't care if we pass this plan, if it, you know, whittles down our debt and is fair. They're telling me I get to have my cake and eat it too, that this will actually, I'll have more money in my pocket and we're going to pay down our debt. And I'm suspicious of that, to be honest with you.
Well, I live my life suspicious of both parties. So again, cryptocurrencies are libertarian for the most part because they exclude the government from their transactions. Mm. So that's going back to the original thing. But you'll hear the Democrats say it's bad and you'll hear the Republicans say it's good. And then we go to work the next day.
The chief market strategist for Path Trading Partners. How do people reach out to you if they want to find you, Bob?
They can go to pathtradingpartners.com. We have an email there, support@pathtradingpartners.com. That's probably the easiest way at this point.
Pathtradingpartners.com. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
I'm worried that today's show's been impossible to understand.
Okay, you've got three audience members, and they go out for a beer.
Are any of them left after the last hour?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sanders started out the White House press briefing today with an analogy about the tax plan as presented like, what would happen if 10 guys walked into a bar for a beer?
Who 10 pays? Reporters.
10 reporters, I know. And you know what? That was the smug little dig that bothered me the most about it.
Well, it's silly.
What do you mean it's silly?
Well, it's an unforced error if you're playing tennis. Why would you do that?
Well, you would if we were all drinking buddies. You know, the idea that you want to sort of vote for somebody that you'd have a beer with, you're not going to have a beer with Donald Trump or Mike Pence or Sarah Sanders at all. And when she's in that room kind of nudging him, going, all right, you know, we're all a bunch of beer drinkers here. No, we're not. And if we are, you're not coming with us. So you're right. That's an unforced error, isn't it? But then you think that the thing was just too ponderous and long. So then we segue from that to a detailed description of Bitcoin and how it might trade on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
I thought that was a fascinating conversation.
I hope it was, but I don't know the person that understood it. Certainly wasn't me. It is kind of fascinating, right? I think we basically understand that, you know, that there's these Bitcoins, electronic transfer, virtual currency. And
did you talk about them now trading futures on it?
Yeah, Yes, we did, Steve.
Okay, I was busy. I didn't hear all of it.
Thank you very little.
The part I heard was fascinating. But, I mean, that's just like, to me, it's like throwing dice, really. I don't get that.
Well, but aren't all stock transactions that way?
Well, futures maybe more than.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're betting that
There's a stock. You're buying a stock is a company that does something.
Right, it's a share of that company.
Right,
yeah.
Bitcoins don't even kind of exist in many realms.
That's completely true. It is now to it. So we'll go from that to something we can all understand. There's a couple of guys on a basketball team.
Jeez.
Mark Carmen's in our studio from WGN Radio Sports. Hi, Carm.
Hi, John. I didn't understand the Bitcoin conversation for the record. It was way, I tried. I was there.
So you got a couple basketball players for the Chicago Bulls. They're both vying for the same position, and so they're tussling on the court, and maybe they don't even like each other. And one pushes the other, and the other goes, oh, that's the end of that fella. That's not a direct quote, but you get the idea. He's had enough. And so he reaches back and punches the player in the face so hard, and it might have been a sucker punch, that he breaks his face in two places and gives him a concussion. The guy with the concussion is getting paid by the team $27 million for the next couple of years and is one of your better players on a team without any really good players anyway, but you need him. And he takes him out. That guy is still not playing. And the other guy, after 8-game suspension, is going to get to play again.
Right.
Bobby Portis, in that case. Nikola Mirotic is the other one. But here's my thing. If you and I got mad at each other at work, and I came up and just cold-cocked you, and sent you to the hospital, and then you weren't able to work for us for weeks because of the debilitating injury I gave you, two things would happen. I would go to jail. How is Bobby Portis not in jail? That's assault. And number two, 8-game suspension for taking out one of your most expensive players?
Right. Well, it's an interesting, I guess Nico's not pressing charges here, I guess, and it's different because that's what they do. These things happen. Physical altercations in practice are not necessarily.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound. But is Mirotic not going to sue him in civil court?
I don't think he is. He wants out of Chicago.
I know. I mean, so Mirotic wanted to stay on the team. He wanted to be with the Bulls.
Mirotic was a free agent last year. He had minimal offers and most definitely wanted to stay in Chicago because his family is comfortable in Chicago. Yes.
And he's so there he is, living in Chicago. He's got kids. Maybe they're going to go to school here. His wife knows where the Marianos is nearest them. Life is good.
Right. They like a good Marianos, no doubt. Did not want to leave.
And then, bam, this guy hits him.
Yep.
And now you've got a malcontent player. Now he doesn't want to be here anymore.
Right. Well, okay, first of all, let's rewind to the fact that the Bulls aren't really trying to win. So they're just trying to get high draft picks. They're trying to develop players. Bobby Portis is a young player. Nico's a young player. Portis is 22. Nico's 26. Nico's had more opportunity and has never gotten himself to anywhere near consistent NBA starter, borderline all-star status. But he can shoot, which the Bulls needed, so he's on the team. Portis is a guy with a ton of energy, rebounds the basketball, sets screens, shoots better than you would think. And he's younger, 22. So I guess there's upside for Bobby more so than Nico.
So it's okay for Bobby to break his face in two places and give him a concussion?
Most definitely not, but apparently they were competing hard, and Nico kind of stepped towards him, and Bobby's got a little bit of crazy in him, and Bobby swung. Bobby's wrong. Nico didn't deserve that. Nico has a part in it, too. And at some point, as violent and as gross as it is, I think you got to kind of move on if you're Nico.
This is the thing. That's where I was earlier this week. I started to think, come on, dude, get on the bicycle. In fact, why haven't you been on a bicycle all along anyway? Now they're talking about him getting into shape to play this season. He doesn't travel with the team. He didn't want to have anything to do with the team as long as Bobby's part of it, right?
Right. He got on the bike for the first time the last 2 days. Now, he did that when the Bulls were just in Miami last night.
Won't even get on a bicycle if the team is in town.
Right.
I mean, what the hell? So I'm fed up with Mirotić, right? But then I think, wait a minute, that guy could have ended your career. That guy punched you in the face and broke it in two places, and you have a concussion now.
Yeah.
You've got a family to feed. Are you kidding me? I can't believe that I'm the bad guy. I'm the one that got punched in the face.
It's hard. That's a hard one to digest. I get it. But again, what are you going to do? If you want to, listen, if your family's here, right, and you want to be in Chicago and the Bulls want you back, which they do, are you really going to allow a fight where he lost his sense of any humanity for a moment? But I don't think he's a bad guy. So at some point, two guys get in a room, you talk it out. Hey, you want to hit me as hard as you can on the shoulder to get even? I don't know. Figure it out. Get a sports psychologist in there. There's no reason that he shouldn't be able to get over this. I'm not saying they need to be best friends, but they should be able to play on the same basketball team.
Really? You think so? I mean, is it that simple? Has there been an instance where one player on a team punched another player on another team, and then they said, all right, let's just hug it out and get back on the floor?
Sure, there's been guys who haven't gotten along. Listen, Dennis Rodman threw Scottie Pippen into the back support, and he came here and won 3 titles. They hated him. Now, they needed him.
He did that when he was with the Pistons?
Yeah. Though? Now, they weren't teammates at the time, but they despised this guy.
What about Jordan punching Kerr, right?
Well, that's another thing. Jordan punched Steve Kerr, and then Jordan called up Kerr and apologized. Now, he didn't send him to the hospital. Didn't knock him out for 2 months.
And they weren't competing for the same position. I mean, that's almost apples and oranges, isn't it? There's Michael Jordan. There's everybody else.
True, but
and Jordan wasn't being an ass. Jordan was, as I understand it, right? You and I weren't there that day, but wasn't that Jordan not tolerating anything in practice that wasn't 100%?
Well, Steve was being physical with him, and Michael had enough, and he swung. He did the same thing to Will Perdue. Perdue set some hard screens on him, said, you do that one more time. Perdue set the same screen. Perdue got punched.
By Michael.
Now, this is...
Hey, Michael, don't be doing that.
Well, kind of worked out for MJ. Brought 6 titles to the city.
And it worked out for Perdue and Kerr.
It did. And so Nico and Bobby are both going to play. Bulls are terrible. There's plenty of minutes for everybody. They're not really like one guy's going to sit and the other one's going to play. They'll play together.
Okay, I guess my question for you. Mark Carman's here, and this is the question for you, too, at 312-981-7200. Having heard that story, who needs, you know, I'm not sure the question is who's the bad guy, but who needs to step up? That is, should the Bulls management step up and separate them, put them in different cities? Or does, I guess, Portis said, I'll shake his hand. He doesn't return my phone calls. Or is it time for Mirotić to let bygones be bygones, put on that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar mask, and start playing with this guy?
Here's another variable, too. Like, if I'm the Bulls, I'm going to, look, Nico, we're not trading Bobby. This is going to be up to you. Do you want to be here or do you not? And if you don't want to be here, here's another factor. We can't trade you because you just signed a free agent deal with us until January the 15th. So you're going to sit out all the way until the middle of the season before you can go play basketball again. Wouldn't you rather see if you can get on the court and see if you guys can work it out? And by the way, on January 15th, if you can't do it, we'll find you a different home. That's how I would play it.
I texted my son Grant, who follows sports better than I do, and I said, what do you think of this story? He said, trade them both. They both suck. It's not worth it. Get a second rounder for Nico and cash for Portis. I don't even know what all of that means. Does that make any sense?
Nico is, Griffin's probably spot on there. He's probably worth a second round pick. And Portis is worth more than cash. So that's the only part that's off there. You could trade them both. Listen, none of it matters. They're not.
I know we're not dismantling a team that's going anywhere.
Right.
I think we're on our way to first round picks both this year and next year. It's going to be different next year the way they do the draft anyway, right? But the worst teams this year are guaranteed the best chance, right?
Yeah, they're changing the percentages by just a little bit, so they don't want to incentivize tanking and all that. But look, the Bulls had a nice pick this year in Lauri Markkanen. He's the only positive on the whole team.
I love that kid's game.
Yeah, he's solid.
And he can't shoot for nothing right now, but he will. Those shots are going to fall.
He's had some pretty good games shooting it, but it hasn't been consistent. And then you've got Zach LaVine coming along. So those are two guys. But the rest of the roster, I mean, who cares? Chris Dunn, who they got in the Butler deals. I mean, holy, I don't know if you've been watching him, John, but the jump shot's brutal, and he throws up ridiculous stuff in the paint too. I'm like, okay, well,
he's a defensive player,
right?
And
if I'm the Bulls, I just want a positive environment around me to create, a good work environment. Okay.
Break, Carm. But I mean, yeah. but your attitude is it's time for Nicola to step up, right? This is my son. He's calling me, telling me that I read the text wrong. and actually, it was Grant, not Griffin.
But oh, my bad.
No, that's okay. Anyway, 312-981-7200, your reaction to where this team is, and just tell me what you think about the notion, too, that you can come up to your coworker and you can break their face, and people like Carmen are going to go, okay, get with the program. That's, just hang in there. You're with us or against us, which is, it's just such a weird, I get it, but boy, what a weird world that is. This is WGN. Mark Carmen is in, and I've just been asking him about this situation with the Chicago Bulls. Nikola Mirotic takes a punch from Bobby Portis and is out until when? Is he coming back this month? November?
They said what I read today is a 6 more weeks. They said 4 to 6 weeks originally, 6 weeks from now. They're trying to creep this out all the way to when he can be traded, January 15th.
You think somewhere in the front office are going, this is actually going to work out really well for us?
No. No, I think that this is a nightmare for John Paxson and Fred Hoiberg, and Fred Hoiberg is not exactly, at least he hasn't proven himself to really know how to handle controversy in his locker room particularly well.
Well, somebody told me in the halls here, they said, my attitude, this person was telling me, is that that the team didn't handle this. They knew that there was bad blood between these guys, and I don't know if they mean they should have separated him at that practice, but that they've let this thing foment for too long.
I mean, I'm around the team a bunch. I didn't know that Nico and Bobby didn't like each other, so maybe that was going on, but
what are you going to do about it if they don't?
They should have stepped. Well, I think what that person is talking about is on the day of when they got in the scruff, there was a lot of contact and things were going on and words were being said, and they could have jumped in earlier. That's, I guess, what's being talked about. And that's true.
Maybe they should do a retreat where they do those sensitivity exercises.
Right.
Like, I fall backwards and you catch me.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Right.
Kind of get to know each other.
See, I think this is a great opportunity. You've got, we don't necessarily learn through violence, but we can learn with some discussion. Why not have a little, why don't we, the Bulls could be a model for the world here. We had a fight, but we're moving forward, and Nico and Bobby could be sitting side by side and doing some public service announcement. Why not? Why can't we get to some good here, John?
Well, Nikola doesn't want to do that.
No, I get it, but maybe we can sort of...
Right, but no, it's funny because whenever I see those like United Way commercials where they show the guys coming in and then they're, doing a soup kitchen or helping some kids on a playground or something, and I suppose the teams give money to the United Way, and I'm a big United Way supporter, so that's all good. But those things never strike me as being real authentic, those moments, I don't believe that Carmelo Anthony is always at the boys' club, always helping out, So it's nice they do the commercials, but I don't know, those things look a little fake to me.
I'm tempted to ask you, I'll ask you the question, with the World Series real quick,
yeah,
and everyone's saying that this is so great for Houston.
Yeah.
you got people who lost their homes, who lost income, who their families displaced.
In Los Angeles?
In Houston for the hurricane.
No,
right?
But L.A. had the fires, too.
Right, yeah.
Well, Northern California did, not L.A., really.
But so they get the whole Houston Strong thing.
Yeah.
And just the whole concept that a baseball team or any sports team can sort of heal a community.
Yeah, I'm totally in on that.
I struggle with it. Like, that's the playground. That's not real life.
Oh, no. I think you don't think that. You remember last year, all the anxiety we had about the election? And we had the Cubs, though. Weren't there times? Do you remember that last year during the playoffs? It was just like, oh, I can put my head and my heart into this and feel so good about something. And it was the Cubs. And we had that last year.
But isn't that an avoidance of what's actually going on? I get it. Like, you could feel good about it, but then you got to go.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with that. I have no. You know, I thought you were going to ask me, is the proposal afterwards?
Oh.
I'm not.
Hey, John, when we go out to the bar, the 10 of us, let's not bring Mark.
I'm going to get to that thing, Steve. So who was it that made the proposal last night?
Carlos Correa.
Okay, so that was really sweet, but I don't know. That's been done before. You've got this World Series moment, and it's the first time Houston's ever won one. And I didn't like the fact that he was sort of...
stealing the spotlight?
Yeah. I mean, really, dude, your engagement's going to be a big deal.
We're
going
to have to find 9 other people to go out with now.
This is like the World Series. And
okay, what about the genuine moment when the name of the guy who made the Yu Darvish gestures?
Yuri Gurriel.
And when he tipped his hat when he came to the
plate? I thought that was nice.
And then there was an outstanding at-bat, right? A 13-pitch duel?
Yeah.
Okay,
so I thought that was great.
Okay, I'm just wondering which of the great moments last night passed your muster.
I didn't think he looked very sincere when he tipped the hat, for the record.
There we go.
Well, so his explanation was that when I sort of made that face to mock an Asian person and then said that word, which translated is a slur against Asians, I believe Japanese specifically, he said that I never hit the Asian pitchers. And that was my signal to my family, like, you know, I got a home run off of one of them, but I didn't mean any harm by it.
This is not his best moment.
No.
Well, what are you laughing at,
well,
Bertrand?
Well, I just don't hit the Asians. What's that?
they're crafty, those Asians, Steve. They throw those breaking balls, and they're hard to hit. And that's what, that, you know, but don't you think Darvish handled that pretty well? He was
he just moved on.
Dude, you know, you said a stupid thing, and if you want to apologize, that's fine. He did. And
we need more of him.
We kind of do.
Ain't the first time I've heard it.
Right, yeah, I'm sure, you know. And I'm not going to let it injure me that much. Hey, Dave, you're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, it was about the fight in the locker room or wherever it occurred. Any other occupation, somebody get arrested over and get fired.
That's the thing I don't understand. A lot of people are saying, can they sue or whatever? Why aren't the criminals?
Well, you listen to people getting arrested and say, oh, he was this or he was that in whatever professional sport or even a college player. He's still a person. He still committed a crime. Why is they get something different than sentencing or hearing or bond or anything else? Us and the regular normal lives, I guess, we supposedly follow the rules. Why, just because you're a professional athlete and they, you know, beat into your brain that you have to win against the other person?
Thanks for the phone call. I don't have an answer to that, Dave. I don't think any of us do.
We're too litigious. We don't need to go to court over Nico and Bobby.
Okay, but if I punched you, say you and I got into an argument about something at work, and I beat you up like that, one punch, but I gave you a concussion, knocked you out of work for months, and broke your face in 2 places. Criminal charges would be filed.
I get it.
That's like, that never happens hardly in sports, not that I can think of. You and I were talking off the air about some of these great tussles on and off the field with athletes, and we all just say, well, that's what happens. I don't even understand. This is a tangent. In a way, hockey fights, you know, those are still kind of a mystery to me, especially in this day and age when we're trying to make sure nobody gets a concussion and, I don't know, we're trying to behave better.
I've had that conversation a million times. People that love hockey don't want that out of the game. I think a lot of people that run hockey would, because it's not family friendly and it's not how they want the sport represented. But that's always been a part of the game.
Is hockey doing anything about that right now?
Nope.
They're not.
No.
All right. No. So how many games are the Bulls going to win this year? I'll let
16.
You go on. 16, and they play 82?
Yeah, that'd be 16 and 66.
16 and 66. Will that be an improvement or not from
that
last
year? That would not be an improvement. That would be bottoming out. Last year they won 41 games. They were 500 team, but no Dwayne Wade, no Rajon Rondo, no Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, but when they made the trade with the Timberwolves, did we know that they were going to be this bad?
That was part of it, yeah.
We knew that this was going to wash out this badly?
Yeah, they were picking a lane. We're rebuilding.
Wow.
We're trading our best player.
Mark Carmen in our studio. When are you going to be on the radio again?
I will be on the radio with Northwestern pregame, 2 o'clock on Saturday. They're taking on Nebraska on the road. And then we'll be on 4 o'clock on Sunday after Preps Plus, talking no Bears football this weekend.
You with Harry?
I'm not sure who's in on Sunday.
You and the guys.
Me and the guys. There we go.
It's good to see you in here, Mark Carmen. It's 229 on WGN. If you have not yet, go to WGNradio.com/events and find out more about our upcoming conversation with Thomas Jefferson. What would one of our founding fathers say about life today? Those are always fascinating, fun, and unpredictable, spontaneous, unrehearsed conversations. We're going to do it in Elgin at the Elgin Community College, December 2nd. Do get tickets to this. You will have fun. And you will thank us for the things you've learned and the way you've laughed and maybe cried. The really remarkable shows. I'm really proud of what we've accomplished with these. And I think you'll be thoroughly entertained and a little bit more informed. We were recording our podcast that we call The Mincing Rascals, which you'll also be able to download later this afternoon at WGNradio.com or on my Facebook page. Maybe you subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast. We started out
or
in a way.
Follow them on Twitter.
Thank you for that, Steve. You know, we started the conversation out today in a way that I did not intend. But Eric Zorn, the Tribune columnist, said something kind of funny at the when we were all introducing ourselves that lent itself to our conversation about the post he had up of Sarah Sanders.
You kind of assaulted him, verbally assaulted him, I think.
Well, you know, every now and then I do my Sarah Sanders impersonation.
It was a Bobby Portis.
Somebody said to me on Twitter a little while ago, they said, John, so it's okay to mock Sarah Sanders with your Sarah Sanders voice, but you wouldn't do that to a Hispanic or an African-American or an Asian person, but it's okay to make fun of her for her voice. And that's a little like the conversation that we had when we were criticizing, at least I was, Eric Zorn for posting a picture of Sarah Sanders next to a picture of Uncle Fester from the Addams Family, because in that picture, they both had the same facial expression, one eye open, one eye closed.
They looked alike.
They did not look a lot alike, well, but you got it, and it was kind of...
For that purpose, it was close enough to post.
And then in the scroll down before, people were also saying, well, look at this. Here's Eddie Munster and Speaker Ryan.
Right.
Or here, this is the one that was really funny, was, who was the character? Do you know the
Grandpa.
Grandpa from the Munsters.
And Ted Cruz.
And Senator Cruz. And that one was really close and very funny. But I didn't find, when I saw the one where he sort of put up the two pictures with Sarah Sanders, I thought, oh, Eric, you don't need to, don't go there. I thought that was a poor choice on his part.
And you're only saying that because she's a woman.
I guess so.
And right.
And you thought that because I think that way that I'm...
I don't think about you at all.
However...
No, but I'm just saying that because it's obviously you have to be sensitive and careful, but if you're not making fun of someone's deformity or their acne or their weight just to be mean, if you're sort of portraying a caricature of them... I think that if you are a powerful woman, you should be as susceptible to that as if you are a powerful man.
Yeah.
It's not a protect. You shouldn't have a gender protection when it comes to that. I don't think it serves women's empowerment any to shield them from that.
Yeah, I guess that's fine. I'll tell you what, though, but that's what it feels like to me. Maybe because I'm 57 and I was raised differently.
Right, but because you didn't have an issue with the Ted Cruz one.
No, I did not. Not at all. I thought,
and it's really the same. It's the same thing, except one is a woman and one is not.
And I think a resolution to this is to say, okay, well, then let's mock neither of them, but I don't want to do that because I think caricature is fair.
And we want Scott Stantis on the Mincing Rascals to stay employed.
And there was an editorial cartoonist listening to this, as well as Eric Zorn, as we were all kicking it around. And I thought it was very interesting, everybody's positions on that. You will hear it when you listen to the Mincing Rascals podcast. We may play part of that on my Saturday show, but you'll be able to download it all later this afternoon, The Mincing Rascals. Lisa Mascaro has the page one story in the Chicago Tribune about what Sarah Sanders was talking about yesterday and, of course, today, and that is this GOP tax plan. And I thought she broke it down pretty well. I asked her to join us, and she said that she could, and I think that's her on line one. Hi, Lisa. It's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John. Good, thanks. How about yourself?
Good. You don't have anything to say about the conversation we were just having, do you?
Nope, not my area.
Here's your area. You said the House GOP tax plan would dramatically lower the cap on widely used mortgage interest deductions to new loans totaling no more than $500,000. I know you co-wrote this with one of your partners, but that's your story, right?
Yep.
And I think a lot of us are wondering, okay, so how does this affect me, at least in its current version? Do you have a sort of ballpark answer for us? Is this going to cut most people's taxes?
Yeah, sure. Well, listen, I can lay it out and folks can kind of look at their situation and assess it for themselves. Overall, what this plan is trying to do is to limit the number of itemized deductions that people take and move people instead into one standard deduction. So for singles, it would be a $12,000 deduction. For couples, a $24,000 deduction. You still have your mortgage interest deduction. It's that going forward on those new loans, they'll pass it a $500,000 loan instead of what it now is, which is $1 million loan.
Yeah, but most of us...
Go ahead.
Well, most of us don't borrow more than $500,000 to buy a house. And if you do, maybe too bad for you, but you can bear it.
Well, yeah, in some areas, you know, of course, in Los Angeles County, for example, where we have our sister, you know, paper deal, Los Angeles Times, there, you know, the median home price is just north of $500,000. So for some areas, it is higher. And so that will be something that will be a hit and will be something that those homeowners going forward will need to look at. There's also a cap on your second, the interest deduction on second homes. And so that's also something that folks would have to be aware of. There's also just a repeal of a number of deductions that people take across the board. Again, as the Republicans aim to streamline the process, and so individual households are really going to have to look and see, you know, do they do better with sort of going line by line and taking deductions for, you know, all sorts of things. You know, their medical savings accounts, moving expenses, student loans for your students, the interest on your student loans, all those kinds of little, smaller deductions that people take do add up. And what they're going to have to assess is, does it add up to, you know, enough to get rid of those and take this bigger deduction? And, of course, the rates are now consolidated into fewer categories. So you're still going to have that top rate income tax rate of 39.6%, but it's on a higher income threshold. Right now it hits households at about $470,000 annual income. Going forward, it'll be really households at $1 million and above. And then there's other tax brackets going down. So people are going to have to really look at their situation, see what their income level is.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, how do I do that? I mean, so I'm reading this stuff and I'm going, okay, well, I think that'll be good for me and I think that'll be bad for me. And I'm kind of going back and forth on some of these things, but I won't know. I mean, really, until they pass it. And then I sit down next April and do my taxes and maybe I'll be sorry for this. I wish I knew more specifically right now if this is going to be good for me or bad for me.
I think that's a completely legitimate, you know, question. And people it is going to be a little bit of a moving target because, you know, even though this is the bill, it still has to go through the legislative process. You know, with the committee hearing next week, and then there might be amendments and changes. And then, of course, even if is able to pass it by Thanksgiving, you know, it still has to go over to the Senate, which could do a lot of other changes. And so, you know, as folks here, reporters, you know, we will be reporting and trying to explain what we know. Of course, this just came out, you know, some hours ago. So we're all pouring through it, reading it, you know, alongside you and your listeners, they're trying to make sense of everything and see, you know, the assessment of how it looks like it will, benefit or not, you know, regular folks.
Where are you right now, Lisa?
I cover Congress, so I'm here on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in some sort of congressional hall.
I am in the hallway.
And are they literally kicking this stuff around right now? I heard earlier on a report today that there was applause when I presume from Republicans when the thing was presented. Are they debating it or talking about it right now?
Yeah, well, so what's happening right now is there was this morning a meeting of the House Republicans over in the House office buildings, and it was a private meeting, and they did that. I did not personally hear the applause, but I imagine there was some. I know folks told me afterwards there was a lot of enthusiasm in the room as the plan was presented. Now I'm just over here in the Capitol building where they have there's a series of House votes going on other topics. You know, they still got their regular business of the day to attend to. But yeah, this is what everyone's talking about. This is a huge priority for Republicans. You know, they have control of the House and the Senate and of course the White House, and so they're very eager to have a legislative accomplishment for their hold on the power right now, and tax cuts have been a huge priority for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, they are all very much working on this. But it is a work in progress. And like you say, there's a lot of questions. I think, you know, people want to talk to their constituents back home. You and I have talked about the individual side of the tax code, but there's also a lot of changes to the corporate and business side. So these lawmakers are going to have to really roll up their sleeves and take a look at this and see if, you know, if this is going to be a benefit for the people they represent, you know, before they cast their vote.
I'm going to let you go, but down the road, you know, it would be nice. Okay, here's your assignment, Lisa. Maybe you guys are already going to do this. I want you to do one of those things where I type in, like, how much money I made and what my mortgage interest is and blah, 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 and then I'm able to see if I come out ahead or not, you know?
Yeah, no, and I know we will be reporting on this, you know, quite a bit now going forward. So folks can always, you know, go to the website, go to the newspapers, and, you know, I'm sure we'll have lots more stories tonight, tomorrow, and in the days to come.
If you don't already, today's a good day to subscribe to a newspaper. Lisa, keep doing what you do, and let's visit again down the road.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
She's with the LA Times and the Chicago Tribune as well in Washington, D.C. today. Yeah, I'm like, I don't care if it's Zippy the Squirrel that comes up with the tax plan. I'm just trying to figure out, okay, is this going to be good for us or not? The big picture, which maybe we should also care about, is regardless of how good it is for you or me, is it
good for the country?
Right, because right. If it's bad for the country, then we're all screwed in the long run. You know, you're penny wise and pound foolish.
Right.
Then.
Someone's going to have to pay more.
Yeah.
Might as well be you. Hey, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You used to talk to a Texas Republican congressman.
Yes, he wrote a book called The Doctor in the House. He is a physician from Texas who's in the House of Representatives.
It wasn't Lamar Smith, was it?
It was not.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember his name now, but I'd recognize it if you just spit it out at me. Why do you bring that
up? Well, we just heard Lamar Smith is another. The second, Hensarling was another, but a couple of Republican congressmen from Texas not running. You know, there are more and more legislators here in Illinois as well, but also in the Congress who are choosing not to run again.
Well, because why?
I think their reasons vary, but it's just not very much fun.
That's it. Even if you're in the power, you know, the party in power.
Right.
Can you imagine?
It's just been uncomfortable,
I think. If you didn't really, really want or need that job, would you want to run for governor of Illinois? I don't understand that for 2 seconds. If I've got $1 billion... I am not running for governor of Illinois, Jack.
How about if you had a few?
And if I didn't have $1 billion, right. I am not going to try and make 100. What does governor pay? What does being governor pay?
Not enough.
Like, right? Tom, look that up. I don't think it pays $200,000. Blagojevich would know, but it doesn't pay that much. It does not pay enough for what that job is worth. That author, Steve, was a guy named Michael Burgess, Republican member of the House of Representatives representing Texas. Yeah, I haven't talked to him in a long time. I should call him. He's a Tea Party Republican. And before he was in Congress, he was a practicing doctor of obstetrics and gynecology. We'll come on him. I think I annoyed him a little bit, and I think he annoyed me a little bit. But actually, he's a bright guy trying to do the best he can, and I enjoyed his conversations. Speaking of TV shows that you and I enjoy, Time Magazine in their latest issue has a pretty good story, and it's not small. The funniest thriller, and it's the story of a TV show that we have been watching at my house, Stranger Things. Stranger Things. Have you watched Stranger Things? And it's got a, it goes on at some length here, talking about the cast members and what a fun sort of trip it is to go back to, I don't know, when is it, the 1980s. And so they don't have CD players and they don't have, you know, Facebook. They have Sony Walkmans. So it's somewhat modern but also dated. The child actors in this are really good, and some of the adults you'll recognize too. And that's in the latest issue of Time Magazine. And then yesterday when we were talking to Michael Phillips, the film critic for the Chicago Tribune, we were talking about movies and whatnot. And on his way out the door, it wasn't on the air, but he said, oh, and see Lady Bird. And I thought he was mentioning LBJ, the movie that's out with Woody Harrelson, which looks really good. I don't know if it is, but doggone it, it looks good in the trailer. Woody does anyway. But he said, go see Lady Bird. In the Wall Street Journal, here's the beginning of their review today. Greta Gerwig's Lady Bird has so many great zingers that it's hard to pick a single sample. But here's one for openers. The heroine of the title, captured in the cockeyed fullness of adolescence, has just finished her driving test. And her examiner tells her she passed. Really? She says. Thanks. It's not a thanking situation, the examiner replies. You either pass or you don't. Miss Gerwig's movie is very much a thanking situation. Once you've seen it, even while you're watching it, with the grin stuck on your face, you will want to give thanks for how wonderful it is, how wise and funny and full of grace. The movie is called Lady Bird.